You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prop G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special three-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the Future of Entrepreneurship, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prop G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
We are live, pal.
Hey, we're live, pal. Welcome, everyone. I'm of course, your host, Jose Young, Spear from Fighting.com. It is a chilly December afternoon here in Phoenix, Arizona. I know Guilherme Cruz, who is one of the co-hosts this week. We figured there's a lot of Brazilian fighters in the headlines from last weekend, so we should get the best Brazilian MMA media person on the planet on the show. So, Guilherme, how's the weather down in sunny Brazil?
Yeah, it's sunny, it's hot, it's all good. Good to be here back to the side talking about some fighting with you guys.
Oh, we're always happy to have Guilherme on, so I know everyone was excited when I announced he was coming back. But Casey, how's life in Englewood?
Englewood's up to good, you know, just staying pretty much quarantined and hanging out by the fire, staying cute, you know.
How's lockdown?
Well, it's kind of lockdown. It's like one of those lockdowns, but no one's really doing.
Right.
But yeah, it feels the same. Still have a job, still healthy, so everything's perfect for me.
There you go. It's pretty terrible here in Arizona. I think we have the highest spike in the entire country, but
Tennessee took that over. Your second place.
Tennessee took it over. So we're now number two. I know we'd fall eventually. We're on the decline, guys. We went from one to two. Anyway, you guys know the drill. You can leave a question in the comment section. You can leave a question on Twitter. You can leave a question on YouTube. Casey's Manning. I already see Jessica Crystal Cruz saying happy Wednesday. Happy Wednesday. I got my black coffee here, my MMA fighting mug. Casey, what is our first question from our lovely, lovely listeners?
First question.
From Zakuko Kegi on the site, longtime commenter, Anthony Rumble Johnson. Do you guys have any insight as to why Rumble signed with Bellator? So, yes, one of the two big moves to Bellator, I'm sure we'll get a question about the other one, so we won't spoil it, to hop from UFC to Bellator, or the UFC parted ways with a high-profile fighter, and Anthony Rumble Johnson signed with Bellator. There's no word on who he fights first or why he signed, but what do you guys make of Anthony Rumble Johnson's jump from the UFC to Bellator years after his last UFC fight? And in recent months, he's been teasing comeback. The UFC wanted him. When I was at the press conference, Dana White said, we want him to stay. He wanted to stay. Just didn't work out. And his exact phrasing was, use your imagination, when someone asked why. So, Guilherme, what do you make of Anthony Rumble Johnson's jump to Bellator?
When I use my imagination, I just think about money. I think that's the only reason why he wouldn't stay in the UFC. And now, especially with the UFC releasing a lot of big names, I don't know if they would be willing to spend a lot of money in someone like Anthony Johnson. But it's a bit surprising to me, considering he was willing to fight at both 205 and heavyweight. Yeah. And both divisions need someone like Anthony Johnson. So that's a big surprise for me when I heard that he was leaving to sign with Bellator.
Yeah, when Dana White said that he was going to cut maybe 60 fighters by the end of the year or around this time, Anthony Rumble Johnson was not one of the names I thought, especially because, Casey, remember when we were at the Dominance MMA Media Day, He said he was the one that wanted to fight Francis Ngannou. He wanted to fight the scariest guy. He wanted him to fight right away, so he was willing to fight the biggest names right away. Casey, what do you think about Rumble jumping?
He wanted to fight Francis Ngannou if you paid him right.
Mm-hmm.
So Guillermo answered the damn question already. It's money. It's money. It's the only reason. Like,
you sure?
Oh, whoops. Is that Francis? Yes.
Maybe.
Hold on. Sorry. It's money. Like, if UFC is going to offer this much, AJ has already left the UFC before. He went to go.
He got cut because he missed weight a bunch.
Oh, like that really matters.
Yeah.
Yeah. All you had to do
is. And Anthony Johnson wasn't the Anthony Johnson when he lost to Vitor Belfort and got cut. He wasn't this big of a name like this time.
Right.
Yeah. It's. I mean. Until Anthony Johnson tells us how much the UFC was offering and how much you guys paid from Bellator, I mean, unless he's taking less money to go to Bellator, I mean.
I think the interesting thing is when we see fighters in recent, the last year or so, that want more money and they leave or they get cut, Dana White trashes them at a press conference or interviews. Yeah. Did not do that with Rumble.
Yeah,
just
he
said,
did.
Use your imagination. Nope.
That's a trash. That is a trash.
Yeah.
No, what did he say to Masvidal? What did he say to John Jones? What did he say to Connor? What did he say to all these keys? Like, he did the whole John Jones wants Deontay Wilder money. He's not that big of a star. Jorge Masvidal, he's like, he just didn't want the fight. There's a lot of different ways you can turn down a fight. All he said about Rumble Johnson was use your imagination.
He said he wanted to be in the UFC. He said he wanted to be in the UFC.
I also know Anthony Rumble Johnson is very big into smoking marijuana. If he wants to be able to smoke weed and fight and not test positive for anything, maybe he wants to go to Bellator. But that's just hypothetical, subjective stuff that I don't know of. Just saying, it might not be money because Dana White didn't seem to trash him as hard as he did previous fighters.
I think he totally trashed him.
I agree with Casey here. Yeah,
I mean, without saying
that's something into it makes you imagine that. Anthony Johnson, for some reason, is running away from who knows.
He said, what did he say? He says he wants to be here, right?
He said he wanted to stay.
Yeah,
we wanted him to stay.
That's trashing him because that means they're basically kind of trashing all his signing to Bellator. Goes, oh, he only signed to Bellator because, you know, we had, you know, there was something going on. He can tell you. Yeah. Like the Yair thing. He was like, oh boy, you don't, Yair's in trouble. Oh boy, I'm going to let him tell him. It was just like, he didn't update his location.
The Yair thing wasn't money.
Yeah, I know, but like he trashes him. Like that's, he knew what it was, but he made it sound like this big thing. And even with AJ, he's like, he wants to be here. He wants to be here. He's like, no, AJ wants the biggest checks. That's what he wants. Because he's a prize fighter.
Apparently we have an interview with Rumble on our site coming soon, so maybe we'll have some more answers for these questions.
But what about, are you excited? Are we excited to see Anthony Johnson?
I'm all excited to see Anthony Johnson fight whoever. Like, he's an exciting individual. Also, shout out to Corey Anderson for the absolute best Instagram post I've seen in years. Do you see that, Casey?
I don't go to Instagram. Yeah.
Corey Anderson, there's this, it's like a funny skit on Instagram of this guy, and like it's like one of these like funny Vine Instagram skits where a guy opens a bag of chips and then his friend like just kind of pokes his head around the corner and his friend is like, Cam, nothing in this house. And he's superimposed on the bag of chips. It says Bellator light heavyweight title. And when the bag opens, his friend that pokes around the corner has a big Anthony Johnson graphic over his head, and then Corey Anderson is like, I can't have nothing in this promotion. It was good. It was funny. Very self-aware.
Good for Corey Anderson.
It was very funny. It's probably the funniest thing Corey Anderson has ever done in his life.
Well, I think Corey Anderson, I don't think of comedian, but yeah, it's nice to have a good laugh every once in a while.
It was nice to have, he was having a laugh at his own expense.
Yeah.
They never fought, right?
Never.
Yeah. No. It'll be fine. Any more insight? We good?
Got more insight? when the interview comes out, I'm sure we'll have more answers or more questions or both.
Next question. All right, let's go to the YouTube comments.
Joseph Boza, Bellator 254. I checked out Aline Malay versus Juliana. It was a great fight. The commentary was making out like Bellator was pissed that Juliana only won because of the pandemic. Thoughts? Casey, you picked the question. You and Alima are very close. I was driving to Las Vegas when the fight car was happening, so I missed this fight, so I can't really speak on it as much. So, but what did you make of Juliana's win over Aline Malay, or dethroning Aline Malay?
Well, just to the comment, talking about the commentary making it out like Juliana only won because of the pandemic, I didn't get a sense of that. I thought what they said was, which I thought was accurate, and it was like this fight was, first of all, it was a big layoff for Alima and Vasquez, but Alima's last three fights have been, two of those fights were in Hawaii, one fight was in San Jose. So essentially she had like a serious, serious hometown advantage and everything. So this is going to be the first fight in a long, even when Alima fought, even in the casino around here, it was still like 95% people going crazy for her. So that her last, every title, every one of her title defenses, essentially. So this is her first title defense against her toughest opponent with zero crowd. And they just said that will have an effect on Alima. And I don't, and they're not saying, they didn't say she's going to lose or Juliana won because of this. I think that's just a fact. You know, it's like some crowds really inspire fighters. Some crowds don't really matter. And I think Alima said often, when she walks out of the crowd, she hears those fans, she starts tearing up during the walkout. You know, she has the big opening ceremonies and the big walkout with all her friends and family doing, you know, whatever they do, you know, just her stuff. Yeah, so that's all they really said. And I didn't think they were trying to make excuses for Lima. I think they were just kind of stating the facts. Go on.
Was it a good fight?
Yeah, it was a good fight. Lima started really slow. She came on toward the end, but wasn't enough. And I thought Lima said it really, and even all the post-fight stuff, it was incredible. Like Lima, like her and Vasquez were in the middle of the cage. You know, she was telling the camera, she's going to be a great champion. She's awesome. Vasquez is, you know, just super emotional. I mean, it was a good fight. Vasquez, she fights pretty conservative. She fights smart. She fights very smart. Conservative isn't the right word. Mm-hmm. She reminds me of like Valentina in the sense that she won't go crazy unless she has to go crazy. So since Lima couldn't take her down and she was losing the stand up for the most part. Yeah, Vasquez just kind of cruised the decision. I mean, it was a competitive fight, but the clear winner was Vasquez.
Gee, Brazil has a new champion. It's not in the UFC. It's in Bellator. What do you think of Juliana's win over Lima?
It was a good win. It was not the best fight of the year, but it was a good win for her. I mean, I think just this fight should have happened a long time ago, back when there was no pandemic and fans and all that. Should have happened in Hawaii when they did a card there, and both were fighting but different opponents. It's a good win for her, and I mean, in a good scenario, it would help the UFC. It would help Bellator to come to Brazil one day. Finally, they have a lot of Brazilian champions, but
they have three, right?
Of course, right now there are four.
Four, Chris. Yeah,
or I keep five. Talking
about Chris.
Oh, Chris, Cyborg, Juliana, Patricio, and Douglas Lima. Yeah.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
well, Pitbull has five,
two belts, has so he has five.
Yeah, yeah, so five belts.
They have five belts, four champions. Yeah, I mean, when this pandemic is over, they should have gone to Brazil years ago. That was like part, when I interviewed Lima and Patricio before their fights in Chicago, that was when Pitbull was fighting Chandler and Diego was fighting, or Douglas was fighting MVP. Both of them were like, when we win, we're going to Brazil. That was like 2 years ago and they still haven't been. Now, it also happened to me that they fought the day Anderson and Jose lost, and Andrade won. It was all that same day.
Yeah, that event was not a good day for Brazil for the UFC in Brazil, because a lot of the big stars lost. So that was not a good night for the UFC.
Geesh.
Wait, what channels is Bellator air on TV in Brazil?
It's on ESPN.
Oh, ESPN.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
They were on Fox Sports, but Fox Sports, no, they kind of merged with the ESPN here in Brazil. So ESPN airs Bellator now. I think that event aired on Fox Sports because ESPN was airing something else, but it's on ESPN every Thursday.
So, oh wow! So UFC and ESPN, sorry, UFC and Bellator on the same channel.
No. UFC in Brazil airs on Globo and Combate.
That's so confusing.
Bellator airs on so ESPN. Confusing. No, it's a different thing.
You know, no, Globo, no, I believe.
Yeah. It's Globo owns Combate, and they air UFC on pay-per-view. And ESPN airs Bellator here. That's it.
That's so weird. I mean, that's just funny. You know, like, yeah. Over here, it's like, whoa, UFC's on ESPN. It's a big deal. Yeah. Over there, it's like,
ah. Yeah, it was like when Bellator was airing on Fox Sports here, UFC was airing on Fox Sports in the U.S.
Is ESPN as big a network in Brazil as it is over here? Or
No, it's not the biggest sports channel. The biggest sports channel is Sport TV, which is owned by Globo.
See, that's why we bring you on, man. You know things, man. You're of the world. Like here, I'm just a dumb American.
ESPN
I don't know
is big
anything.
Here, but not the biggest one. ESPN the biggest is one. Big here, but not the biggest one yet.
All right, I am wiser. Thank you. Did you know this, Jose?
Learn something new every day.
But
thank you, Jose. Yeah, I still haven't seen the fight. Like, I wish I could speak on it. I was just driving because there was a massive rain monsoon in Phoenix when I was leaving, and no one can drive in Phoenix when it rains.
A big bummer in the fight, that did you see that big cut that Alima got?
Mm-hmm.
Gui? You remember that big cut? Like, everyone thought it was from an elbow or something. She got it from the freaking cage because she dove in for a takedown, and her head just hit the cage, and the cage sliced her eye open, which I'm not it just it was just unfortunate. But the biggest strike of the fight was that flying knee that Alima took to the face, and that broke her nose. But I felt like Alima actually fought better after that. Like, she finally kind of woke up. Like, she I think that was in the third round, and she wound up winning the fourth round and then losing the fifth round. But it's
like Mackenzie Dern against Vienna. She just fought better after the broken nose.
After the broken nose, they're like, oh crap, I gotta fight now. All right, here we go.
Do you think Juliana will hold the belt for a while?
Man, I was hoping someone was going to ask this. Yes, I do. And I think she's maybe one win away from us really talking about, like, how good is Juliana Vasquez? Because as far as I've probably seen her fight maybe three or four times now, and I haven't seen her in one bit of serious trouble. I don't know how good she is. I mean, basically with the top being, you know, Valentina. I mean, it's important. I'm not going to say, you know, she's better than Valentina Shevchenko, but, like, actually we just don't know how good she is. She just seems to just, she hasn't been in any danger. I haven't seen any of her fights. What do you think? What do you think, Gui?
I think the biggest challenge for her are Lima and Vanessa Porto, who just signed with Bellator. She was the Invicta champion. Yeah. So if she fights Lima again down the road and fights Vanessa Porto and beats both of those, so I think there's no one else that really threatens her at the top of the division.
No, but where do you put her kind of overall with all the flyweights in the world, every promotion?
It's hard to compare because
that's what I'm saying. It's just hard. Yeah.
Yeah. Because she hasn't fought really the elites of the division. Bellator is doing a good job in the division, but you can't compare the top 10 in Bellator and the UFC. So it's hard to come here and say, yeah, she's better than Valentina. We can't say that right now.
Yeah, I'm not saying that, but yeah, because especially in the ladies flyweight, there's really no crossover. There's no common opponents. All the ladies seem to be fighting each other, but there's not too much cross rivalry, like in like the LFAs or Invicta or anything like that. Like, there's nothing really to compare it to, so it's just hard to say. Yeah. Okay, important question coming up right here. Important question.
Danielle Pompilio on Twitter, in honor of all the fight circus conversations going on lately, Who wins an MMA fight between Gabby Garcia and Mighty Mouse? Hashtag the A-side. No thoughts. Casey, you picked it. What are your thoughts?
I didn't pick it. It was a question.
That's an important question.
Gabby Garcia, Mighty Mouse. Is this MMA? Are we doing MMA? Are we doing just spinning attacks? Or any blindfolds? Any other rules?
Per Daniel, it says in an MMA fight.
All right. My God. Gabby Garcia, she's barely an MMA fighter. If it was pure grappling, with Gabby Garcia weighing a solid, what? I don't know how much. She's solid 200 in muscle?
No, she's bigger than that.
Okay, yeah. So she's like 220, like a solid 220, not a flabby 220 or whatever.
I think she's 6'4 or something like that. She's huge.
She's like a linebacker.
Yeah.
Is it
a ring or a cage?
Ring. It's in a ring.
Yeah, it's a ring. Okay. I mean, Gabby Garcia's a beast on the ground, but can she close the distance without getting, hits or stuff like? She's way too big. I think she would just rush like a crazy over Mighty Mouse.
But Mighty Mouse,
take him on the ground.
She'll never be able to bend over far enough to find him.
Yeah, she can just throw herself into him.
Well, you know what? I'll talk to the Cam Soda guys and let's make it happen.
Yeah, booking one of those Russian events that just got that lady fighting a big man.
That's Bellator's newest signee, sir.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
They signed the big man?
No, they signed the gal.
I wish they had signed both of them. Like, rematch.
Yeah, rematch.
Let's do this in Connecticut. I like you're very polite to that man, Gui. Like, the big man. Come the big man. Remember that little roll he did into the cage?
Yeah, that was epic, man.
That guy is awesome.
Him laying on the ground and she just celebrating the victory with a foot of him. That's a foot of the year.
Well, I'll find it later. You know what? To answer your question, the fans win.
Yeah,
Gabby Garcia versus Mighty Mouse. The fans.
Jose, no, Jed would win. Jed wins.
Fight of the night on this weekend's card. So many potentially great fight. What's your prediction for fight of the night? Oh, you're talking about this weekend's card. Man, so UFC Vegas 17, I think that's the number. Headlined by Jeff Stephen Wonderboy Thompson and Jeff Hands of Steel Neal. Absolutely stacked card. Jose Aldo's on the card. I think he's opening the main card against Marlon Chito Vera.
The co-main, right?
Are they the co-main?
Yeah, the co-main.
So.
Okay,
yeah,
they're the co-main. It's a stacked card top to bottom. Yeah. But Key, you have to put money on picking a fight of the night. What's your pick?
Michel Pereira is fighting, so, and he's fighting Chaos Williams, so that's gonna be fire.
Yeah,
is that gonna be competitive though? Because Michel Pereira and Chaos Williams have been in some pretty one-sided fights.
What? That's my pick.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
I think you get a bonus there.
That's fight of the year, knockout of the year, everything of the year. Yeah. You know, yeah, it's gonna get something. It's just gonna be the if that fight sucks, it's gonna be the craziest fight of the year. Just because like just something wild will happen. Yeah, I mean that's it. I mean if I was running the UFC, I would have that fight as the very first fight of the night. Let them get rested up and bring him out again for the main event. It's like you got like 6-7 hours. You know, they should be good to go then. So that's how I would run things, because that fight would be so good. You need to watch it twice.
Hmm. Who else is on the card?
Does it matter?
Yes.
Some other dudes with lots of six packs.
There are several women's fights, so not just dudes.
I need to finish.
Jillian Robertson's fighting, most submissions in women's UFC history. We got Anthony Pettis is fighting on the prelim card. Rick Glenn is returning after like 3 years. Greg Hardy and Marcin Tybura is on the card. Let's not forget, because I'm pretty sure I saw another question. Marlon Moraes, Rob Font. That's a scrap. Like, we've talked about the bantamweight division. Casey's on record in the bantamweight division is probably the most exciting fight weight class in the UFC. We got Aldo, Marlon, and Rob Font all on this card. There's a lot of great, and obviously it's Thompson and Neal's epic too. Awesome card. Can't pick fight of the night. There's too many to pick from.
This card is so awesome. Dana White can't even be in the building. He has to go on vacation just to control himself from all the just emotion and excitement. Yeah, he's guy. Yeah. He won't be able to be neutral and just, you know, be a nice promoter by the cage. He's like, I just want to be a fan. I need to go to my yacht in some ocean tropical place and just enjoy it there. That's how good this card is.
Drawn Wynn's coming back too. I think it's his first fight in a while.
From his USADA suspension on methamphetamines? Was that what it was? It was
something weird. I don't remember. Yeah. Someone make Chaos Williams a Wikipedia page.
Yeah, he's got a Tapology page. That's all I need.
Oh, my fault, Casey. Don't make any. No one make him a Wikipedia page.
Okay. Are we just ordering our viewers to go just start doing computer programming on their own?
They're here. It's not computer programming. It's just writing.
All right.
Go ahead and write one, Jose.
Yeah.
Do it right now. Do it right now. Come on. Open up a little window.
I'll do it after the inside.
Chaos Williams, capital K.
The Ox Fighter.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prop G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special three-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the future of entrepreneurship of Prop G Pod, special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prop G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you for the question, Trumbo. He's been a commenter since, I'm pretty sure, the Luke Thomas days of this chat. Another question from Joseph Boza. Did Charles Oliveira create a mess in the lightweight division by winning 8 in a row? Who knows how long Dana is in denial about Habib retiring, and will the title be held up for a period of time? So, yes, Charles Oliveira dominated Tony Ferguson en route to a unanimous decision of the co-main event, UFC 256. That's, as Joseph Boza just said, 8th win in a row. Obviously the biggest name he's ever defeated. He has the most submissions in UFC history, the second most stoppage wins in UFC history. I think he's clearly one of the winningest fighters in UFC history. I wouldn't put him on list of greatest lightweights ever just yet, because a vast majority of his career in the UFC has been at featherweight, and he missed a weight a bunch of times. He's well on his way. He's clearly well on his way. Still a young guy in his early 30s, but Guilherme, Brazil's own Charles Oliveira, has apparently created a mess in the lightweight title picture. The last time, actually the first time you were on the show, we were fantasy matchmaking him against Michael Chandler. And now Charles Oliveira is beating Tony Ferguson. What did you make of his win? And what happens with the top five of lightweight now?
I think the UFC finally allowed Charles Oliveira to create this mess, because he's been winning for a long time, but he wasn't fighting anyone from in the top 10 and top five. And then they just gave him Kevin Lee in March. He won impressively. And now, all of a sudden, by pure luck, he got Tony Ferguson. The fight he wanted to take from day one, and they gave him just because Michael Chandler wasn't taking a fight in December, and he just excelled. It was a fantastic performance. I really wanna see what UFC does, because I would assume Habib's not fighting again. So are they just giving him a title shot against the winner of Dustin and Conor? I have no idea, because Michael Chandler is out there. So, but it's a good mess. It's a good mess. I don't know if Habib was still around. I don't think he would be the one to get the next title shot, Charles Oliveira. Because, I mean, even with Habib saying that Conor and Dustin already beat them both, it's way bigger of a fight for Habib if he chooses to come back. So I don't think Charles Oliveira would jump over those two because of the business aspect of this. But yeah, that was huge for him.
It was absolutely massive, especially for the lightweight title, because like we said, I have some ideas, I think, of what possible fights. But Casey, what did you make of Charles' win, and who do you think he should fight next?
It was freaking awesome. He got robbed of $50K. He absolutely deserved a performance bonus.
He got a bonus, right?
Huh.
The fight of the night, right? Was it?
Fight of the night, man. There was a fight after that. There was a certain little scrap after that, sir.
Yeah, I forgot about that one. Yeah, you're right.
Let me say, he there was like two 10-8 rounds in that fight, potentially a 10-7 round.
Against Tony Ferguson. It's
against Tony Ferguson. And you know what? I predicted it. I knew it. I called it. But enough about me. Let's talk about Charles the Bronx.
It's never enough about you.
Wow. Look at this guy. Look at this guy. Yeah. No, he won't fight for a title soon. I mean, he won't fight for a title next. He might be the B-side of a title fight, maybe after another win. But I think the UFC is going to try to keep him away from title shot, because they need guys like basically bigger names, people who draw more. And unfortunately, Charles Oliveira just isn't a guy that moves the needle, despite how freaking good he is. I'm just talking purely business. I'm not talking about actually how good he is. Just purely, I mean, you know that the rock he held up when he won? Everyone's like, what is that? What is that? And then I looked at a bunch of old photos. He does that for every fight. And no one ever pays attention.
Oh, Rocky.
He holds up a stone.
A stone.
And I asked him at the press conference. His dad found it hiking on a mountain, and he uses it to symbolize the story of David from the Bible, which, of course, David threw a rock between the eyes of the monster Goliath and knocked him out.
I've never heard of that. Never heard of it.
Yeah, so when he wins,
they raise his hand and they say winner Charles Oliveira, he holds up a stone, and I was like, "What is this stone?" And he told the story.
It's a crystal.
It's not a crystal. It's like a flat, earthy stone.
It counts.
It's in the rock. We'll take it. It's a geode.
It's a geode. Yeah. Welcome to the club.
The 8 wins in a row is super impressive, but unfortunately, we've seen this tale before with Tony Ferguson, where he won all those fights in a row, and then they were booking him in fights when he should have got the title fight. Leon Edwards is in that same boat. I think the problem with Leon Edwards is A, he was stuck in the UK, and then he got COVID. So they were trying to get him fights. Dan Hooker said he had a fight coming up. I assume it might be RDA. I'm not 100%. Obviously, that's just like I'm just looking at the rankings. Charles Oliveira, I doubt, is going to get the winner, Poirier and Connor. Chandler's probably going to fight Justin Gaethje, which means he's still the odd man out this point.
You know what?
I'm going to say, if Connor and fight Poirier and then Habib doesn't come back, if they're doing Gaethje and Chandler, who's left for Oliveira?
Exactly. I think the only thing is if Gaethje fights the winner of McGregor and Poirier versus McGregor for the vacant title, and then Charles could fight Michael Chandler. That could be a possibility too.
You know,
because I know Chandler wanted to fight Gaethje and Gaethje, but then Gaethje did an interview with the Schmo where he's like, "I want to fight the winner of McGregor Poirier for the vacant title."
I think Charles Oliveira. I changed my mind. Just like Charles Oliveira, when getting his fight against Ferguson, it was all about just timing and not getting COVID. And, seriously. If Charles Oliveira can just stay healthy, he trains in the United States, right? He says this.
No.
So, okay, Buffer said.
In Sao Paulo.
But he lived in Houston. He trained and lived in Houston for years, right?
Oh, because that's what Buffer time ago.
Because Buffer said fighting out of Houston, Texas.
Yeah, he's crazy.
Is Bruce Buffer lying to me too? I can't trust
anyone. Yeah, you can't trust anyone in 2020. Yeah.
He lives in Sao Paulo, like forever. Macaco, his head coach, one of his head coaches, he lives in Texas. He runs a gym in Texas. He's one of his managers too. So that's it.
Okay. Go look at every one of his fights in the UFC. Every single time they go fighting out of Houston, Texas. And it always confused me because I'm from Houston, Texas. I know Derek Lewis is from there. I know there are a couple other fighters from there. But I never heard Charles Oliveira there. And it's like, if Charles Oliveira lives in Texas for like a decade now and he speaks zero English, that's insane. So, okay. So Bruce Buffer has been pulling my leg.
I'm pretty sure they also, when they announced Tisha Torres, they said fighting out of Coconut Creek, and I think she's did her entire camp in Colorado for this one. Oh, yeah,
okay.
So, like, I think it's just old score, old intros he's saying.
Yeah, probably.
And no one is correcting him.
No one's correct.
Like, is Conor going to be announced as fighting out of Dublin, even though he did his entire fight camp in Portugal?
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. Charles Oliveira, depending on his health and timing, it's going to be just being in the right place at the right time for Charles Oliveira to get that title shot. Who knows? Dustin Poirier, Conor McGregor might get the Rona 2 weeks out, and then all of a sudden we have an interim title fight between Dustin Poirier and Charles Oliveira. Like, something weird like that is going to happen with Charles Oliveira. Charles Oliveira would be the champ at the end of 2021. That's what I changed my mind.
That'd be interesting. Two champions that can't speak English. Dana White would be pulling whatever fictional hair he has out. From Bunch Flood on Twitter. Serious question and a silly question. One, what is the greatest hip-hop song of all time and why? Two, how many people without any training, never wrestled, grappled, or boxed, would it take to defeat Izzy in a fight? Friend claims 3, but I say 6 to 8 because of the intimidation factor. Oh, man. There is so much to unpack from this tweet. Greatest hip-hop song of all time is a subjective. I have a million thoughts on the matter. I could talk about it for an hour. Casey, right out of the gate, what is the greatest hip-hop song ever? I assume this question is coming because Aunt Andreas and I basically spent 45 minutes talking about hip-hop on the week you missed, Casey.
Yeah. Oh, man. Greatest hip-hop song ever? Oh, boy.
It is subjective and generational. It depends on what you like.
It's not subjective. It's a fact. Whatever I say next is a fact.
It just depends on what people like. Influential isn't always the greatest, is what I'm trying to say.
Nah.
Come back to you. Yee, what's the greatest hip-hop song of all time?
Sorry, I'm not a hip-hop guy.
Oh, bummer.
What? man, Mind Playing Tricks on Me by Ghetto Boys.
That is top 10 for sure.
Yeah.
I'm glad you said that. No one ever puts that in the top 10. That's way up there. That's like top 3 most underrated songs in my mind.
Yeah.
Because no one puts that in the top 5 or top 10.
Mind Playing Tricks on Me. I'm from Houston, so I'm gonna be really so much more influenced by Southern hip hop. Like, I would put Derek Lewis's walkout song, Tops Drop. That is just a classic Houston song. And Esther Lynn says G and a Gee. You remember that song?
I sure do. Which Gracie was that by?
Halleck?
I don't know. Which is the one that ran Matamoros? Like, he was
Halleck
there.
Halleck. It was Halleck, yeah.
Halleck, yeah. Halleck, yeah. Not G and a Gee.
Yeah, Gina Gee. Okay, Gina Gee is like top 20. Sorry, Esther Lynn.
Yeah.
I have a Moment of Truth by Gangstar. It's got to be up there. It's just, I mean.
Did you see Gangstar dropped new music this week?
What? Or new Gangsta music came out only on Apple Music. DJ Premier dropped it.
You found like an old tape or something?
Yeah. DJ Premier posted it. And I was like, me, Andres, and Ant were like, we were blowing all each other up. Personally, my all-time favorite song is The Reminisce Over You by Pete Rock and CL Smooth. I accidentally got Mecca and the Soul Brother when I was way too young for that album, and it basically shaped my entire life. I Used to Love Her by Common, I think, is lyrically the greatest song ever. The Message by Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five has to be top five. Kicking the Door by Biggie, I think, is Biggie's best lyrical song, but it's not his best song, but I think that's lyrically his best song. Exhibit A and Exhibit C by J Electronica. Just Kendrick Lamar's verse from Control basically changed all of hip hop for the last 10 years. And I could talk about this forever. I really could, but we have no time. Anyway, Gee, how many people would it take to be Izzy in a fight? People that haven't changed.
I just finished rewatching the Matrix trilogy, and there's this scene with Neo fighting 200 Smith. So in this case, it couldn't be Smith because Smith is he knows how to fight. So it would be, I think, Izzy would have to fight, I think, 6 or 8. I think that's a good number. But both would have to attack at the same time. Just like crazy.
What? You couldn't. There would be questions I have. Like, are these all the people 185? Are they all 5'2", 125? Is it 8 300-pound men? Like, I don't know.
Okay, so how many people? His size. Could be his size. Right. It has to be his size, yeah.
Okay, if it's his size, and I'm assuming they're athletically fit but just have no fight training, 3 at most. If they're just dudes, like just dudes, he can handle 5 guys, I think, at a distance. Yeah, a lot of teeping, especially if the guys don't record, if they're not attacking more than 2 at a time, like they're kind of, you know, in like bad action movies when there's a bunch of guys that, for some reason they only go 1 at a time, and then the next guy goes ah, and they go in, and the next guy, you know? So if it's no more than 2 at a time, I think
everyone at the same time.
Yeah, if it's at the same time, no more than 3. As good as Izzy is. Now, if it was Ryan Hall, oh my God. He can handle a couple of buses full of like just strong men. Like, it's Ryan freaking Hall, man. So,
just doesn't even have to just look at him and be like, yeah, really? And then they just like walk away.
Yeah, he'll just go,
How about Lobov?
Lobov?
Yeah.
Oof. Oh, man. Well, moving on.
Terrence Leverett, can we all admit that blonde hair dye is the new PEDs? Proof: Charles Oliveira, Figgy, and Bronson. If Max had the Super Saiyan hair during the fight with Alex, he would have had all 10-7 rounds. JK, what is everyone doing to stay positive during this COVID holiday season?
Well, stay positive. No, stay negative, sir.
I see what you did there. Yes, blonde dyed hair is the new PEDs, 100%. I'll say it, or silver hair, because I think Charles Oliveira's was a little silver and then it washed out. So everyone knows my affinity for dyed silver hair. I had it for about a year. But, Gee, what are you doing to stay negative during this COVID holiday season?
And just stay home.
Yeah, that's a good answer. Home.
Yeah.
Are you guys pretty much in the same situation as we are? At least where you...
The number of cases and deaths is going up again in Brazil, especially in Rio and São Paulo, and people are in denial. They just don't care anymore. They don't seem to care anymore.
Really?
It's getting closer. I mean, in the number of cases of people around us, it's going up. I mean, the first in Brazil, there was no first wave and second wave of COVID in Brazil because we only had one big wave that never stopped. So they act like, no, there's no second wave. Of course, we never got off the first wave to begin with. So, but but there's a lot of people around us getting COVID. We lost friends for COVID, so it sucks, and people don't seem to care anymore. That's why I don't leave home. I just stay home.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Casey, what are you doing to stay negative in the holiday season?
I built a dang dojo in my garage. That's what I did.
There you go.
Yeah. I used to have just a bag and one mat in there, but now I have pretty much the entire place matted out, and I have two heavy bags in there. And yeah, now I just have a couple people in my small pod, I guess. And yeah, we just now train in the garage now, and occasionally we go to the park. And I'm hoping late spring that, you know, I can start randomly grabbing other men in other gyms. And yeah, that's about it. Just yeah, but I'm watching a lot, I get to watch lots of movies and catch up on old TV shows, so that's a positive.
Cyberpunk just came out, and that is the only thing my life revolves around besides mixed martial arts right now. It is buggy as hell. I know our mutual friend Cynthia is playing it too, or I think her girlfriend was playing it. It's great. Just fix the bugs.
What is Cyberpunk?
How good is that? Yeah.
Oh, I'm a big GTA guy.
I'm a big GTA guy. Is it better?
It's by the company that made The Witcher. So it is the most immersive city I've ever seen in a video game, where you can pretty much do anything, but it's like in the future. So there's like cars, like Cyberpunk, you don't necessarily need flying cars, but like everyone has like animatronic body parts, and you can get like implants, and you can like run. It's basically like if you've seen the movie Akira, it's like that city, or like District 9 style world. Like it's that type of world. And it's first person, so it's like The Witcher meets Skyrim in a cyberpunk futuristic world. It is so sensory overwhelming. Like, you don't know what to do half the time. There's so much stuff to do. It's great. It is so fun. It's just, I have an Xbox One, and from what I've read, all of the NPCs are like their own characters. So when it loads a new screen, the fan on my Xbox just goes ballistic because it's trying to load like 400 individual characters at once onto my screen. It's phenomenal. Go play it, but don't get it until the patch comes out.
Is there a storyline? Or is it like
I'm pretty early into the game, but it's like if you've ever played like GTA or Skyrim or anything, there is a story, but you don't have to do it because it's so open world that I've only done the first part of the main storyline. And now I'm just running around the city trying to figure things out, like how to pick up weapons and like cyber attack people. So I can't even tell you where the storyline is going because I haven't gotten there yet. All I know is you're a character that is getting back to the city, and you're thrust back into your world. But you have to pick your backstory at the beginning. Like, are you an ex-cop? Are you an ex-con? Are you an ex-homeless man? Like, it's pretty wild. It's pretty wild.
Ex-cop, ex-homeless man.
And I would go homeless when man, you're like building, when you're building the character, like physically, it's like you have to like, how big of your genitalia are you? Like, that's literally how immersive it is, the character building. Yeah.
Dude, come on, man. Everyone maxed it out, right? Like, it's like
maxing. But you can be a girl, you can be a female or a male.
It don't matter, I'm still maxing it out.
Yeah. Oh, you can be a male that you can be
tell me more.
Too. You can be a male that has a female voice but you refer to yourself as they or them. It's very fascinating. It's a very fascinating game.
Segui, how big did you make your genitalia?
That's a good question. I have to buy the game to
subscribe, man. It's very fun. It is so fun. I have it on Xbox, but it's crashed twice just because if you want to buy it, get the new console first and then buy it, because it's definitely not optimal for an Xbox One or PS4.
Oh, I think I have read that or heard it doesn't work on PS4 too well. Really?
Yeah,
when you said you can adjust the size of your genitalia, I just quit listening after that. I was just kind of
you can control the voice, your voice too, so you can be like a huge buff dude with like a woman's voice, and it's so funny. Like, some of the characters that I see online is they have this huge guy with like dreadlocks and scars and cybernetic parts all over his body, and they're like, hey, it's very funny. It's very, very funny. People are having fun with it.
Whoever that guy is, sign him, Dana. I want to see this guy.
There is one of the side missions is you have to go become the underground fight champion of the city.
Can you just is it like GTA where you can just get if you're just bored, like, I'm just gonna decide just to kill some random people.
100%. One, you also get a car, so you can just like go on a rampage like whenever you want.
Nice. Just like real life.
Yeah.
Alright.
Just like real life, he says. Tristan Gordet, any solution of who a fighter should be fighting, whether they are unranked or not? Wonderboy complained about Shamayev jumping the line, and we now find out Romero turned down fighters ranked below him. I mean, the solution should be the rankings, but that's not. No one uses those anymore. But, Guy, to answer Tristan's question, what is the solution for all of these? Who should be fighting who?
I think the only solution is tournaments. The Bellator tournaments or the PFL system. That's the only solution. Other than that, it's matchmaking, it's business. It's not only sports. So there's no solution. Those ranks, the UFC rankings, are a joke. So just ignore those.
Remember when Dana said, I don't know who it was about, maybe who won, but I think someone asked him what's next for him. Dana's like, we'll have to see when the rankings come out or something.
Yeah.
Like, what does that matter though? Like, I don't understand when he said that. I was like, okay, but you guys, like, what does that mean? It's like, if he's ranked at number two, he gets a title shot. I just didn't know what that meant. So,
means he gets more Reebok money.
Free shoes.
Not anymore. No.
Yeah. Now it's going to be Venom, right?
No. It used to be, the Reebok money used to be based on rankings, but then they changed the number of fights.
Right. That's right.
There's number of fights.
Yeah, because journalists started to hop off the panel because they didn't want to control how much money fighters made.
Yeah,
I do remember that.
And number of fights things suck too, because we know why that sucks.
It's good for the
Michael Chandler's coming in. They're gonna make $2,500, right?
Yeah,
from Reebok money.
That's what, it's a joke. Like Cyborg in her final fight in the UFC when she fought Felicia Spencer, I think she said she made like $6,000 or somewhere whatever the bare minimum was.
It's like it's good for the fighters that are like maybe like 4-0 coming off the Contender Series because they get money from Reebok and they don't have to worry about convincing sponsors to sign them. But then when you get guys like, I don't know, Justin Gaethje, who when he'd fight on World Series of Fighting, or maybe not, maybe that's a bad example, but like pre-Reebok, like you could just
For someone like Charles Oliveira, for a lot of Brazilians that really make a lot of money from sponsors, and you get like $10,000 in sponsors, that's a lot of money. It's way more than any of them would ever make without the Reebok deal. So
before Reebok.
That's why if you ask every UFC fighter, if they like the Reebok deal, I would say 90% of the Brazilian fighters would say they love it because there's more money than they would ever make without the deal.
What was the biggest sponsorship company before Reebok in Brazil?
Like
when you could have whatever sponsor you want.
It was Boni Açaí. They used to sponsor a lot of fighters. And Pretoria was a fight where they would sponsor even the octagon mats.
I remember that. Venom was a big one down there, right?
Yeah, Venom as well. Venom still sponsors a lot of fighters. I think Jose Aldo, Machida.
Didn't Machida have Head and Shoulders too?
Yeah, I had a Head and Shoulders Machida bottle. Yeah,
that's so. You still have it?
Yeah, somewhere around. Yeah.
That's awesome. That is so awesome. Then he walked out with a hat and stuff. Yeah, I remember Bon Assay. That was funny.
Yeah, everyone had the purple hats. It was the purple hats. Yeah,
In the old UFC Undisputed 3, that was one of the few sponsors you could get.
Oh. Oh, no, wrong one. Don't look at that. Don't look at that. Remember these guys?
Yeah, I do remember those.
But this is great. Like companies like this was like, they were giving, good money to just, no names on the very early prelims. So, I would like a dynamic fastener shirt. I would wear a dynamic fastener shirt. I don't know why. I would enjoy that much more.
I can't remember what it was, but like there was one card where every single fight someone had a dip your car.
Shirt. Dipyourcar.com or something.
Yeah. But it was every fight had one of the fighters had a dip your car shirt.
Remember the Full Tilt was sponsoring everybody.
Oh my God! I forgot everybody. About that. Yeah. Science was everywhere too.
Yep.
The first UFC cards in Rio Preparatorium would have someone in the fighters' hotel doing 5 weeks just signing them deals, so they would use the Preparatorium shorts in the fight on 5 weeks. So they would have everyone on the card.
Venom will take Reebok's place. I don't personally know the details of the payout system.
No one knows.
For Venom. No one does. But Venom has been making fight gear for a long time. I would imagine just the actual outfits might just be better material or better put together than Reebok, but that's just my assumption because they've had experience making fight kits.
Venom does. They actually make very good gloves, make very good gear, actually, which Reebok did not do. They make pads and, you know, all that, like tie pads and all that stuff. Now, the question is, are they going to make lots of different variations for different fighters, not just three or four? Like, oh, you're from Brazil? Yeah. Hey, let's make it yellow, you know? I think the hope is Venom is going to have, like, 200 different types of variations of it. You can mix and match and put it together, much like you can on Cyberpunk. You can, you know, you can just kind of create, you know, create your own look. Like, yeah. Well, maybe not that much. but hopefully. But to answer the question, there's almost zero information out there. Yeah. How long is this deal going for? The Reebok deal ends in March or something?
In April. I'm not 100%.
The Venom deal starts in April.
April. Okay. We should be getting some details coming out pretty soon, you know? And I wonder if any fighters have been involved in the negotiations and how much they get paid.
Good one.
I know.
That was a good one.
That's a good one.
Yeah. I keep feeling like asking fighters that. It goes like, so how are negotiations going, guys, with Venom and UFC negotiating how much money you guys are making? Just to go, I trust them.
Yeah. I'm a UFC employee and I'll do whatever they say.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Guys, watch the Anthony Joshua fight at all?
I didn't see any of it. I saw a little highlight.
It just makes me like, anytime I watch really high level boxing outside of the actual like awesome fights, like especially with Clarissa Shields in the headlines now, I wish the UFC would let the fighters have fun entrances. I really do. They rule so much.
I know.
Like the professional. I know. I do have friends who think they're stupid and like they have no place in the world, but I absolutely love them.
That was fun.
People just want to see the fights. They don't want to set people that live in the town of Footloose, Casey, don't want to have fun.
Yeah, no. Jeez.
But can't be bigger than the UFC.
I can't even.
But that's the case in WWE. That's the case in comic books. Like in the 90s, we saw artists like Jim Lee, Rob Liefeld, Todd McFarlane. They got such a cult following that they could just leave and all of their fans would follow them. And now DC and Marvel are doing everything they can not to make these rock star artists anymore. So tale is old as time when it comes to companies.
I'm going to put this out there, but because I don't know very much about it because it's a lot to read up on and I haven't had the time, but.
Shiger Tark
on the YouTube comments. Is the lawsuit even a thing? Well, it's very much a thing.
It's a thing.
It's happening. I can't speak on it technically because it would be the worst person to speak on it. I'd be worse than Dana White.
It would be worse than me.
It is happening. Go read it. Go to Bloody Elbow. I'm sure they have a great write-up on it. Or our own Stephen Morocco has been doing a lot of reporting on it, too. He did a lot of live tweets based on it. So if you want all of the information on the current class action lawsuit against the UFC outside of Dana White saying, I don't know, I'm not talking about it, go to Bloody Elbow or Stephen Morocco or any of the other sites out there that are doing journalistic work on it, because none of our three can speak on it without being incorrect about even one thing. And with lawsuits, you can't be incorrect on one thing. You need to be 100% on everything.
But I think we can confirm it is a thing, though.
Yes, yeah. 100%.
And by Dana White saying he doesn't know anything about it, you know it's a big deal.
Exactly what I was going to say. And the payout is in the billions if it happens. So. Yeah, it is very much a thing.
I only read the first couple of paragraphs, but there's apparently a good article by Kevin Draper in the New York Times about it too. Mm-hmm. And or just get on Twitter, hit up Josh Nash, Dr. Paul Gift. Who's the fighter? The main
Nate Quarry.
Nate Quarry. Just hit him up. I'm sure those gentlemen are very happy to send you some links, Mr. Tark.
Nate Quarry is a good follow on Twitter, even if you disagree with anything he says.
I love that guy.
I know a lot of people, they use Twitter to get in arguments, but I don't know. He's an informed tweeter, and even if he doesn't know something, it seems like he's doing his due diligence to figure stuff out.
Cool. Just a few more questions in. I like this one. Where is it?
Tristan Gordet again. Agree with Hooker's assessment of the type of fighters that Tony and Oliveira are. So Tony is a crowd fighter, pointing out the two losses, while Oliveira doesn't do well under pressure of big fights. I know Dan Hooker said this, but I didn't get his exact quote. But Casey, what are your thoughts? Look like you're about to say something.
You know, it's funny. I saw the headlines for this article today, and just I think yesterday I tweeted out the same exact thing, and. It was kind of half jokingly, but Tony's two worst losses in his career basically have come when zero crowd was there. The Gaethje and Oliveira loss, just dominant losses. Oliveira's two biggest wins of his career came with zero fans. Kevin Lee and Tony Ferguson. So I was kind of joking, clearly that was the reason, but. I do think there's a little truth to that, you know. I'm not saying those fights go the other way. I'm not saying if there was 10,000 people in the crowd, Tony Ferguson beats Justin Gaethje, or whatever. But crowds have to affect people. I mean, do they affect them enough where you can turn a loss into a win? I don't know, but I do feel those fights are more competitive if Tony Ferguson has 15,000 people chanting his name.
We've talked about it on preview shows. We are big fans of the scientific method here on MMAfighting.com, and the evidence is out there. We obviously need more data first. Like, if Charles Oliveira fights a big name with a crowd, because you can't just have one side of an experiment. You also need the other side. So we need Tony Ferguson to fight in a big crowd again, and we need Charles Oliveira to fight in a big crowd again against big names to get the full thing. But Gee, what do you think of Mr. Tristan's question?
I think it definitely affects, but I wouldn't hold much weight on that on both fights. And I think Tony lost because he fought someone in Justin Gaethje who has great takedown defense, punched like a maniac, and Tony did an extra weight cut he didn't need to do, and that definitely affected him. And now he fought someone who has a better grappling, so he lost. I don't think having a crowd or not affects that much. I think it affects a little bit, of course, but not that much to change the result. I'm not saying Tony Ferguson wouldn't win with a rematch with a crowd, but I don't think it changed that much.
But is the fight different? I'm not saying like Tony wins either of those fights, but like those are lopsided losses. I mean, outside of, I think, okay, against Tony, against Oliveira, did Oliveira even get really even touched that entire 15 minutes? And I think outside of one maybe good punch that he hit Gaethje with, I can't think that he, I don't know, I just, I would just hope that a crowd, I would think a crowd would make the fight a little more competitive of Tony. That's all. I don't.
Yeah, and people get used to the environment. I remember when the UFC first came to Brazil, Brazilians would win basically every fight. And now they're not winning every fight anymore. So I think people got used to coming to Brazil and listening to fans saying they're going to die. And they just ignore that and win the fight. Yeah. So
it also, coincidentally enough, Tony Ferguson is past his prime and Charles Oliveira is just hitting his prime. So the crowd is great, but they're also physically at different parts of their, like when Charles Oliveira debuted, he was 20, right? And like we were seeing him lose to these big names, but now it seems like he's in his physical prime. He's at the right weight class. He's only gotten better technically. Tony Ferguson, we all agree, his skills haven't diminished. I think people catch up after a while. We saw with Ronda Rousey. The only fighter where people really haven't caught up to was GSP and John. And, like, even John, like, his last few fights have looked more competitive. Like, they have been more competitive than ever before.
Very much,
and Tony Ferguson beat Anthony Pettis, took a lot of damage in that fight, beat Cowboy, blew his eye up, but then
first round, super competitive, remember, too.
Super competitive. Got pieced up by Justin Gaethje. Also, Kevin Lee got full mount on Tony Ferguson. Mm-hmm. Let's not forget that. So Tony Ferguson wins fair and square. There also might just be at different parts of their career. As the word of the week last week, crossroads fight. How many times did we talk
about? I know. Ariel says it once, and then it becomes like this giant thing.
Right.
You know, but back to that point, though, I am forgetting a big point of this, too. And this is what Tony mentioned in his Instagram post. It's not only the crowd, it's the entire fight week, too. It's
like, I agree.
I mean, like you've been to the fight weeks. Like, you know, usually when you walk through the lobby, you're going to see a bunch of fighters in camps. There's fans. There's like, you know, there's like always like 10 dudes with like, you know, a bunch of pictures just waiting to get signed and everything. It's just it's a fight week. It's a fight week feel.
Also,
and it's just gone.
According to Tisha Torres, this had way more strict rules for. So now you can't even leave bubbled, to go. Like, they actually did a bubble this week.
And it's not like a cool big bubble like the NBA does. It's just like you're stuck in this one Holiday Inn. You know, that's the bubble, Holiday Inn. Or
this was Tony Ferguson's first Apex fight. It was Charles Oliveira's first Apex. But then, like, look at Kevin Holland. He's fought in a million of them. And he's basically, this is an old hat for him now. Speaking of which, we haven't gotten any questions on it. Oh. Guilherme, what did you make of your fellow Brazilians' losses with Junior dos Santos and Jacare Souza? To say they're Brazilian legends would be an understatement, but in this time, the UFC is talking about cutting fighters. What did you make of Jacare and Junior's performances last weekend?
Cigano's loss was kind of expected. I expect him to lose, and I picked him to lose by knockout because I don't know, cara. It's tough, but the Jacare one really surprised me.
Shocking.
Kevin Holland on the ground was trying for a triangle against Jacare, but that was surprising. But of course, he never expects to submit Jacare, but he was just keeping him focused on something else while he was landing elbows and stuff like that from the bottom, and then just knocking him out just like that. That was insane.
That was one of the most insane knockouts I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. I picked Jacare to win that fight, but it wasn't one of those fights that there's no way he can lose. Yeah. I knew it was a tough one, but I was picking him to win. Now they are both on complicated situations in the UFC.
Dana's already said he thinks Junior should probably call it a career.
Yeah.
Or fight for a lot less money.
Yeah. I think he has more fights in his deal. I don't know how many, but I think he re-signed with UFC not that long ago.
Yeah.
I don't think he wants to stop fighting. I think he wants to keep going, but four straight losses by knockout, it's tough.
My thing with guys like
and UFC keeps giving him monsters.
This is the issue. This is the problem. Yeah. This is the problem.
It's like the Anderson Silva situation. If you think JDS needs to stop fighting, just don't book him against a top 10, a top 5, or someone like Gane. So don't book those fights, you know. But of course, the UFC is gonna do that because they want Gunn to become the next big thing by beating JDS. So
it's a weird part about prize fighting. How once you get to a certain level, say JDS, you're not allowed to go back down a level. Like once you become a top five fighter, you can only fight top five fighters or people that the UFC think will be a top five fighter. But like, why not put JDS against John Volante? You know, like, it's like give the man a break, you know? Or, I mean, I'm not trying to trash John Volante, but, but he looks great in that heavyweight body. I love heavyweight John Volante, by the way.
I think that Junior got the treatment where, like, remember, he's the one that welcomed Blagoy Ivanov to the UFC, 5 rounds. And then he fought Tied to Ivasu, who's on a run, for 5 rounds in his next fight. So they gave him two people they thought could be a big deal, and he smoked them. And then, well, not smoked. Like I think he smoked and injured Blagoy, and then Ty looked that was pre-AKA Ty. And then they gave him Ngannou and Curtis Blaze and Jairzinho. And then they gave him another prospect like they gave with Blagoy and Ty, and Ciryl Gane beat him. So it's like the Charles Oliveira, Tony Ferguson conversation we just had. They're just at different parts of their career. Who if he fights again in the UFC, who should he fight? Rematch Ben Rothwell? Alexei Oleinik?
Dude, I want to give Junior some guy I've never – whoever – who is that?
Paul Harris?
No. Way in the back of the line. Like, who is the guy the cop? He has two
wins. Yeah, I think he has a fight. Dukakis, whatever his name is.
Yeah, fight the guy – he should fight the guy that Dukakis just beat. I don't even know his name, but that's who we should fight. Junior needs to be fighting those guys, those heavyweights. Because I think I've seen that guy get knocked out before. That's about it. I don't know. That's why.
Why not rematch Stefan Struve? They fought 10 years ago.
There you go. Something like that. I can see that.
That was Junior's second fight in the UFC.
Who would win right now? If you rematch him right now, Junior Dos Santos or Verdum. That's a rematch I wish we got to see.
Verdum. I would pick Verdum.
I would pick Verdum too.
Same.
It's just interesting, you know? Like after all these years, now we're going Verdum.
Where's 12? 10? We went a little over time.
Yeah, man.
No media day today. Media day is tomorrow.
Gui was just a big blabbermouth today. Look at it. Now we're over time, man. Jeez.
Sorry, guys.
We ready to wrap it up?
Sure. Wait. So thanks, everyone, for joining us on this episode of the A-Side Live Chat. Gui, you know the drill. The floor is yours to say whatever you want to say about whatever you want to say.
I just want to say give Charles Oliveira a title shot.
Whoa.
Oof. That's it.
Well,
it's not gonna happen, but he deserves it.
Interim title? Is Habib getting stripped?
Habib's not coming back.
Why do you think that? Yeah. So then he vacated the title. Oliveira versus who?
Whoever wins in Conor and Dustin.
Could Charles Oliveira be a superstar?
The UFC wants to make money, so of course one of those guys is gonna fight for the title next. So
could Charles Oliveira be a big? Could Charles Oliveira be a big superstar in Brazil?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, but the UFC needs to push him. They don't do anything with him.
Casey, what do you got to say?
I am excited about this card this Saturday. It's a great fight night. I think it even has a earlier start time. So I'm excited to get through this card, and then what is it? 2-3 weeks off of no major cards.
Like after a month.
Yeah.
Well, Ryzen.
Okay. Well, no, domestic cards. Oh yeah, I'm totally looking forward to Ryzen. Oh yeah, man, I'm already thinking about the fact that I'm bummed that I won't be in Tokyo to actually see the event, but I am excited to just be on my couch
watch it
and watch it. That's actually I'm actually kind of excited about it.
So last year I wrote the event of the year for the site, and I had to write it like by Christmas, and then Ryzen happened. I was like, why did you make me write this a week before Ryzen? So I'm not writing it until Ryzen and the next UFC card are over, because for all we know, two could be bangers. Anyway,
Ryzen,
That's all the time we got. We'll talk about Ryzen more next week, or even closer to the actual card. Thank you so much, Guy, for stopping by. It is always an absolute pleasure to have you on. Casey on the ones and twos per usual. We're out.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prop G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special three-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the Future of Entrepreneurship, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prop G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.